Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Ryan Dunn.
And I'm Steve Marks.
So this week we have a show, and hopefully it'll be a shorter show than our previous ones. But before we get
to
that...
We always say that. We always do. It's like 45 minutes.
90 minutes later after edits, it's 45 minutes. So, hey, we just got back from Tech Ed this week. I had a wonderful time.
It was hot there.
If you were one of the lucky 50 people to attend my diagnostical Kung Fu session, thank you. Remember, you can still submit your evaluations. Or at least I assume you can. It might be closed by now. You did a talk at...
I did a talk.
What was it?
It was a lap around the Windows Azure platform. Windows Azure, SQL Azure, AppFabric.
Was that your giant slide?
It was. It's up on onebigslide.com. I should probably blog the URL to my slides just in case people want to watch them. But it's actually up on the TechEd site. There's like the mine was recorded. Mine wasn't interactive.
Yes,
Ryan's was interactive. We don't want to see any of the interaction, so we don't record those just in case. Who knows how people interacted? But mine was a regular breakout session, so that's up somewhere so people can watch it.
Right.
I'm sure we can find a link and post it when we post the show.
So before my interactive session, I actually just used the whiteboard.
Yep.
Like my slides were me writing everything on the whiteboard.
Yeah. Way to prepare slides, Ryan.
Yeah.
What a slacker. Show up with a marker.
Hey, that's much more difficult than clicking next.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that.
True. The actual being there, drawing on the whiteboard, is harder than clicking next.
So how did your demos go?
Well, the internet was down.
And we did this discussion. The internet is not actually just in the conference.
Well, fortunately, I had saved an offline version of the internet. And so I was still able to show my slides. And thanks to Windows Azure Development Fabric, I was able to do some demos locally. And the internet miraculously came back to life for me like at two like key moments in the talk.
Yeah.
So that I managed to show most of the stuff that I wanted to. So it was all right.
Yeah, it turns out the internet is actually pivotal to show cloud interactions.
It's sort of important.
Yeah.
This whole cloud thing is kind of reliant.
So in other news, at TechEd, we had some announcements come out. In particular, probably the one developers, I'd say, are most excited for is the .NET 4.0.
I thought it was just .NET 4.
Yeah,
I don't say the .0 anymore.
But
that's
what
like old school.
What happens when we have 4.5?
Well, then you say 4.5.
So now it's just .NET 4.
Yeah.
Okay,
.NET 4.0 is kind of redundant. I mean, the .0.
No, it's really not. It's absolutely not redundant because the .0 indicates it's not
4. Ryan, if I asked you,
4.
What's 9 divided by 3? Would you say 3.0?
No.
3. 3 means the same thing as 3.0.
I would say 3.0.
.NET 4.
I want to be precise. If it was 9.0 divided by 3...
This show is definitely going to be short. I can tell we're doing a great job.
Okay, so...
.NET 4.
Or
no. See, it says 4 in there. No.
Or
right.
No.
Yep.
It was released in the SDK and tools.
Yep.
And the big news is not even to me as much as the .NET 4, which is interesting in itself because it enables new scenarios. However, it's the tooling.
Yep.
Tooling got a major upgrade.
Tools got upgraded in a number of ways.
Yeah.
IntelliTrace... It's one of those cool things, which is actually a .NET 4 feature, but then it's sort of like super enabled in Windows Azure, so you can just kind of click a couple things or whatever. I haven't actually done it yet because you need Visual Studio Ultimate for it, and mine is...
I've
Visual Studio Penultimate installed,
Penultimate.
So I can't actually do it yet. But I'm gonna probably upgrade just for that feature because it's cool.
We should talk to the branding folks.
Penultimate would be an
awesome
buy
brand.
That would sell really well.
That was like the penultimate version. So the Cloud Storage Explorer is in there.
Cloud Storage Explorer. Yep.
The deploy from Visual Studio.
Yeah. Like for real. No more like right click publish and then there are two files and you have to kind of like upload them. No, just right click publish.
And bam, in your face. It just shows you the status, too.
And it actually shows you, it watches it, and it starts it automatically. So there's no more, like, wait till it's done and then hit run.
And then you can also browse your services from a tree view.
In Server Explorer.
It shows you exactly what's going on.
Yeah. And what's the deal with that? You have to add things to that, right?
Well, if you deploy, it actually it'll auto add that particular environment. But if you wanted to just use it to see what was going on in another one,
then you just add things.
And the cool thing also is, if you're setting up your account for the very first time to do the management of the service, like say you've never done, you never use the awesome PowerShell commandlets that like make your life so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose you never use those forever, and you decide for the very first time you're going to use Visual Studio to deploy. I like the workflow that they have in there, which
yeah,
is like add new. It creates a certificate for you. It even cuts and pastes the right path into the thing.
Yeah.
Then it launches the portal. You just have to upload it.
It's It's almost, it's about as seamless as it could be, given that you have to actually go to the portal, log in to make sure that you're actually you, and then upload the thing, right? So, but it does everything else automatically, which, I found much easier than figuring out in IIS or the command line tool to, like, create the certificate and whatever. So even if you're not going to use Visual Studio to do it, I think that's the easiest way to just get a certificate deployed and get ready to go for all the other tools. So
It's super quick.
Yeah, this is very
cool. And convenient. And the we already covered this on the last cloud cover.
Something.
And the CDN is live, but we announced the pricing and whatnot. We talked a little bit more about it at TechEd. Yep. I'm not going to go into a lot of details there. The last piece is the auto-upgrade feature, which is interesting. I don't know if everyone knows this, but using the Service Management API, you can actually retrieve a list of the available guest OSs that we've released in on Cadence, which is like basically after Patch Tuesday sometime.
Yeah. So roughly once a month, yeah.
Yeah. We release a new OS upgrade if applicable. And the way it works is you're kind of stuck on a version by default if you don't do anything. So when you deploy, if 1.3 is the version you chose, then you're on 1.3. We're not going to change you, which makes sense because we don't want to break you or have a regression.
Right. Because a lot of people want that, right? You want to just be on that OS version. If something new comes out, you want to test it first and then go, okay, go ahead and update me.
Exactly.
And that's so you can definitely do that.
So this auto upgrade is essentially place an asterisk in the where the string for the guest OS should be, and then your auto upgrade.
Then it's just automatic forever. Yeah. Or you go to the portal on your existing things. Go to the portal, click OS settings, I think.
Yep.
And then there's just a radio button, say automatic, and it'll be automatic forever.
And that portal just recently changed too. So if you're wondering about what are you talking about OS upgrade button. That's part of
like
this.
A week ago. Yeah.
So you go out there, now there's an OS upgrade.
By the time people see this, it's going to be nearly 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, all right. That's true.
So that was the big Windows Azure stuff. SQL Azure had a few announcements, too, and we're actually going to talk about the big one, I think. Probably.
Well, there's two big ones. There's spatial support,
which
is coming. I think spatial, a lot of people are very excited about A lot of applications today are starting to take advantage of that geolocation-based kind of stuff. Yeah, and so SQL Azure supporting the spatial types is huge.
Yeah,
That is coming out here in the next couple of weeks. It's being deployed really right now. By the time you see this, it might even be there or be very close to being there. But what happened is they didn't want to do it during TechEd, obviously, because people were using the service actively at TechEd and want to make sure everybody had a smooth experience. So the upgrade's going out as part of SU3.
You could have done it while the internet was down.
Yeah, that's probably why the internet went down. They were doing it.
SQLizer took down the whole internet.
So System Update 3, or they're calling it SU3, this is what brings it in. And the other feature released in that was really around the SKU size of the database.
Yep.
So we have a web edition, which is 1 and 5 gigabytes.
Right.
We have a business edition, which is increments of 10 all the way up to 50.
Right. And so that's like there are like two things here, and one is you can go bigger. Like now you can go up to 5 without having to make that leap up to the 10 gig version. You know, and now you can go up to 50, which is which is good. But there's also sort of a little bit of difference around the pricing now to give you more granularity. So if you have, for example, a 20 gig database, that doesn't mean that you flipped over into the 50 gig range and now you have to pay for a full 50 gigs.
Right.
It actually means, hey, if you actually stay at 20, you get charged at 20. So it basically rounds to the nearest 10 in the case of the business edition.
Well, almost.
Rounds up.
Nearest
That's
10.
True.
So to be clear, your charge, you set a max size, which is, that's just an enforcement so your database doesn't get bigger than that.
Right.
So you could set a max size of 20. And
that would be the
maximum you ever be billed. But let's say that you had 12 gigabytes stored.
Yep, that's
20. You're going to be billed for the 20. But if you had 9 gigabytes stored, which is under the 10 gig SKU, then you would actually be charged for the 10 gigabyte as opposed to the 20.
So it's like ceiling of your size divided by 10 times 10. That's what you're charged for.
Yeah, mod 10 minus 0.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. and the same thing happens actually on the smaller one, on the web edition, right? It's 1 to 5, and I think it's in 1 gig increments, right?
It's just 1 or 5.
Oh, it's 1 or 5. That's it?
Yeah. So it's a step function. It's a step function with more granularity this time.
Right, right. So anyway, but good news, because it means that you actually... you can pay less for some things than people were anticipating. A lot of people were saying, well, I really need like just over 10, and now you're going to bump me up to this 50. So I think people are pretty happy about that. And this blog post here just explains what we said, but probably more accurately.
And more concisely.
And so just so that people know exactly what's
This is by Chihan, by the way, who one of the PMs on the SQL Azure team probably knows what he's talking about.
Probably.
But I read this and then some.
So now you know what, what you're talking about.
So now, almost.
All right.
Some of the time.
What else do we have? There's some sort of sporting thing going on these
days. I believe it is the World Rugby Cup. being held in the nation of Africa.
Okay.
Can we get any more ignorant than that?
Yeah, sure.
okay,
it's baseball. What else would people be excited about?
Yeah, the NBA Finals is going on right now.
Yeah,
is there anything else?
That's true.
World Cup soccer.
Yes.
In this little
football, they call it in some parts of the world.
Correctamundo, JJ.
It's confusing.
And what they have going on here is a mashup being hosted in Windows Azure of all the event places and things going on in South Africa, in relation, obviously, to the World Cup.
Yep.
Go USA. And if you take a look, you can zoom in and kind of hit these little items, and they'll pull up some of the information and the results as they're happening. So as these events go on, you can kind of track it here.
Yep.
Very cool, a slick little application developed, of course, using Windows Azure. And we just wanted to throw this out here as one of those exciting apps. And obviously, this is a perfect use, too, because, you know, the World Cup ends, and instead of buying all this infrastructure to host an app like this, that you're going to essentially...
Yeah, the World Cup is one of those...
throwaway, but it's essentially a throwaway application at the end of the day. In a few months, you know,
right.
No one's
going to want to see this. Well, it's one of these, like, predictable bursting, I guess, is what we usually call that pattern, where it's like, it's the extreme. It's like, well, we knew we didn't need this before the World Cup. We know we need it a lot during the World Cup because a lot of people are looking for information. And then we know that afterwards it's going to be shut down again. So good use of Windows Azure. Kind of cool app. It looks pretty. You can watch videos and then see, like, it zooms around to the locations where the video is showing.
Nicely done.
So it's kind of cool.
Nicely done. All right. Well, let's talk about the feature this week.
Yeah.
The feature let's this week, we failed to mention it, actually, in our longish intro, is something that a lot of folks have been asking, which is, how do I get SSL working in Windows Azure? It's not complicated. There's a few things that you probably want to figure out or discover as you're doing this, and a couple tips and tricks that we'll point out along the way. But let's just talk about how you get SSL running. I'm going to open up Visual Studio at this point and show you a Virgin Cloud Service 1 project. You can see this is the first time I've even created a cloud service because I have
this is Cloud Service 1.
Revered number 1, even.
Yeah, that's...
Well, I wiped my machine not too long ago, so I'm not up to, like, 45 or something where you're at.
I renamed all of mine to have an underscore in front of them so that they didn't, like...
So they show up first.
But they're still, like... No, just so that it would get Cloud Service, whatever, for demos and stuff. It's sort of...
Right.
When it says, like, Cloud Service 57 or something, people just...
they're like, you've been doing this way too much.
Right, yeah.
All right, so the general behavior here, like, I haven't done anything. I just... create a new ASP.NET project. The general behavior is you're going to want to go up to the web role, and you're going to go to the settings and the endpoints, actually. And there's two input endpoints that you can define on the web role here for HTTP. HTTP, obviously, and HTTPS. The first thing you do is just go ahead and enable that. You're declaring that you want port 443 to be open. Makes perfect sense. You need that port open if anyone's going to reach your application. Then you can see in the dropdown that, this one actually has one in here already, but you might not have anything in here. This is going to be pulled, actually, from configuration that you've defined, and I'll show you how that's done. But what you want to do at this point is declare that there's a certificate, and it's called a certain name. So to do that, you go to the certificates, and you see I have one here defined already.
So let's show your
let's pretend,
Virgin Cloud application.
Yeah,
that
let's
just like
let's pretend that I didn't
the illusion
have that.
Here. Everybody's trust in you, Ryan, has been just shattered at this moment.
Well, I added a certificate. And I forgot I added it. So yeah, here's a certificate. It was really tough. I clicked the button, add certificate.
Yeah.
The only thing you want to say is if it's local machine or current user. For SSL, you typically leave it in a local machine, the My Store, and then you have this thumbprint.
So what does that mean? That means that location is on my VM in Windows Azure, where is it going to put this?
Okay. Yeah, that's what it is exactly what it means. So you could leave this blank even at this point, unless there's some validation here. Apparently not. Good. So you could leave that blank at this point because you can choose the thumbprint later, which is one of the tips we want to talk about, which is your thumbprint will probably vary by environment where you deploy this. In the dev experience, you're going to deploy clearly not the production SSL certificate. You're going to wait to put that into the production. So at this point, I do want to show a couple things that happened. This GUI makes kind of abstracts it away from you, so you can't really see what happened. But if you go to the definition file, you'll see that we have a couple things have changed. We declared a certificate, and we just gave it a name. And it doesn't matter what this name is. I actually usually like to rename this SSL or something like that so that I know what the purpose of the certificate was.
Right.
And you'll see that there's no other parameters in here other than saying, I'm going to declare that I have a certificate called SSL, and it's going to be in the local machine in the My store. That's right. So that's the definition. Now, the actual where you tie these two together is really over in the service configuration. So I match up whatever this certificate was called in the service config. I say, look, I have declared already a certificate in my definition called SSL. Here is what I want you to really use.
Right.
And so this is where you put in that thumbprint.
So now, this is a lot like config settings, right? Where in the definition file it says there's going to be a configuration setting called my greeting string or something, right? And then the config file you say, okay, great, that config setting is going to have this value.
Right.
And so it's the same sort of thing. The definition says there's going to be a certificate. This is what I'm calling it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the config file basically says here's what it actually is. Here's,
correct.
You know,
And so if you go back into the pretty UI, you can choose a thumbprint here. The deal is that you're probably, in most situations as a developer, you're not going to have a hold of that eventual real deployment certificate.
Right.
So you're going to choose a thumbprint maybe of a local self-signed cert that you generated using INET Manager. Extremely simple to do. You know, open up INET Manager, go to certificates, say generate self-signed certificate. It gets installed, you point to that certificate in the UI, and you're done.
Okay.
Which is exactly what I did here. Mm-hmm. I previously generated that certificate using IIS. So once you have this thumbprint in here, you'll see that it just changed the service definition file is all. Configuration.
Right.
So I put that thumbprint in. Now, when I go to deploy this, I'm going to change that, depending on where I deploy it, to be either in the prod or dev or QA stage. I'm going to just change that. Now, the other bit about this is that once you have your certificate defined in here, you actually need to put it out on the portal. So one of the easiest ways is to simply go to the portal. And if you look at the bottom of the page, you'll see something called certificates. Now, I want to just draw a distinction. These are certificates that are deployed as part of your hosted service, which there's a big difference between that and the certificates that are deployed as part of managing your service.
Yeah.
And I really want to draw a difference. Sometimes we talk about certificates, and people get a little confused. They're like, well, are you talking about my hosted services certificates? Are you talking about the ones that I uploaded? I upload in two different places. So let's be clear. Here is the certificates that you upload for things like SSL and as part of your application. These are the ones that get installed on your VM. So your VM, this is where it goes. When you want to manage the service, if you go to account, you'll see manage my API certificates.
Right.
Totally different thing.
Right.
Okay. Now let's go back and we'll actually look at this manage. The easiest thing is to go here and just upload it. You'll notice it says PFX only. PFX is a file format that usually has a password on it that it contains the local key plus the certificate, so the private key and the certificate. What you do is you just go here and you browse and upload it, put in the password, and you're done. Okay. You'll see it. Oh, we can actually do that here, I think. So I'll go and upload a certificate that I have. In my, let's see, documents. Let's do this one. So here's a real PFX I have. This has actually been signed by VeriSign as well. So, you know, you'll use whatever you have, and you need to put in the password. I think this is the password. We'll find out. Let's try it again. I think it's a different password.
PFX, right?
I might have done a really tricky password.
That looks like a strong password you've got there.
Yeah, that was it.
Yep.
So you see, I'm not.
Security tip.
Security tip. Use a long password if you're going to share these. So what happened?
Well,
is
no one would ever guess that you used like a one character password. So they'd be unlikely to try that, I think.
Well, this is actually a source control somewhere. I just happened to pull down a local copy. But anyhow, this particular SSL certificate has been obviously issued for myazurestorage.com, which is that website you can use. And we've uploaded the certificate. Now, this has a private key. However, comes a situation where you want to upload either intermediate certificates, which don't include the private key, or you want to upload certificates just for purely, it could be like a WCF authentication. It could be you're using Windows Identity Foundation, and there's some chain that you need to validate. And those are usually public key certificates. Well, public key certificates, it turns out you cannot export those from using the GUI, the MMC. You can't export them as a PFX.
Yep.
The PFX is meant to be a wrapper around that private key. So that leads us to the tip of the week.
Tip of the week. It's that time.
It is that time. I think we had thought about a theme for this.
New Orleans theme.
New Orleans.
Tech Ed was just, you know, in New Orleans, and we were there. And
New Orleans.
Taking in the local culture, which, as far as I can tell, involves alligators and jazz music.
Or an orgy of crawfish, etouffee, and po' boys, and bread pudding. That seems to be the other definition of New Orleans.
It could be that there's a lot to the culture.
we're going to boil it down.
Two different slices.
We're
going
to boil it down to the essence, which is jazz music. I think
jazz music
and alligators.
Alligators. I think alligators are important. So I think we should see, you know, an alligator jazz band. You know,
why
introducing
not?
The tip of the week. So here's your tip of the week.
Okay.
Can't wait to see that one.
Yeah.
So the tip of the week is about what you just described, right? This problem of, I actually want to upload something that doesn't have a private key.
Exactly.
Which there are lots of uses for this, right? And how do I do that? Because a PFX file is not readily apparent.
Right. And there's two ways of doing this. And I'll talk about the harder way and then the super easy way.
Okay.
One is you...
So everybody can just tune out for the next minute
or
so.
Well, let me explain...
Solely talking about the hard way.
Let me explain in theory. I said harder.
Okay, harder.
I mean, like...
It's not that
falling
hard.
Down the stairs is not that
I
difficult.
I said the really hard way, actually.
I
just said the really easy way.
Yeah.
Harder way. Okay, fine.
So the harder way is you write about, I don't know, 5 lines of code.
That's pretty hard.
And essentially, you pull the certificate either out of a local file, the .cer, which is your Base64 encoded certificate. It's a very standard format. You either pull that X509 certificate to .load, you know, the path to that. Yeah. Or if it's already installed on your machine, you open up the store, you pull out, you need to get a hold of that certificate and into an X509.2. That's basically what you have to do. And then at that point, you do .export. And one of the things that are in there is the format, X509 format. So you do X509 format .pfx. It gives you a byte array. You write that byte array to a file. Done. You have a PFX. Take that, upload it. You probably should define a password on there as well, because I believe we will reject anything that doesn't have a password on the portal.
Right. Okay.
So you do need to define a password. Use something really secure like I did, a one-character password. We think that's best practice. And then secondly...
How Ryan got fired from Microsoft.
Well, it's a public...
Right here.
No, well, look, it's a public key. It's
no, actually,
key.
Right.
This it's meant to be widely disseminated.
Fair enough. I stand corrected. That's actually true.
Right? So you upload it that way. The other is the super, super, super simple way is just simply use the Windows Azure Service Management commandlets, the WASM commandlets. And it looks a little bit like this. Add certificate, then you put in your certificate. So this is a get item cert. Here's my actual, now to be clear, this certificate right here is my API certificate. So this is what I'm using to manage the account.
Okay.
And then my subscription ID, which I'm sharing to the world right here. Go ahead, have fun. And then my service name, so I'm going to upload it into that My Azure Storage Dev. And then here's the certificate to deploy. And I'm just pointing it to the actual .cer file.
Okay. So wait, let's back up, because I only half got it as you said it and then realized it later. The first parameter there, certificate, has nothing to do with uploading a certificate. This is the certificate that you use
to manage
with every command with the PowerShell commandlets that
correct.
Basically says, here's how I authenticate myself to the management API.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that has nothing to do with what we're talking about, which is that last parameter, really, where you've said a CER file, and mm-hmm. presumably there's five lines of code in the PowerShell commandlets that convert it.
And then upload it.
And upload
and,
it.
Do all that good stuff.
What about a password? Does the...
In this case, if there's no password, you don't have to put it in here.
Okay, so it'll upload it without...
It'll just
upload whatever you give it. It's not going to assign a password.
I believe it assigns a blank password, but I believe the validation logic on the portal doesn't allow a zero-length password.
I see, if you go through the API,
I think it does allow it. So,
getting to the minimum, one character wasn't few enough for you. So you went ahead
Look, this is a .cer file. This is not a PFX.
Right.
So there is no password. It doesn't make sense to include it as a parameter.
Yeah, well, that's why I was just wondering if you had to add one, if the conversion added one, or if it didn't have to.
Here's the thing. What actually might be happening, and I'd have to go check the code, mm-hmm. We might be wrapping this and putting a password on it. Like, behind the scenes, this commandlet is actually taking that CER file
yep.
and changing it to a PFX so it can upload
it. And then it uploads
and
it.
And as part of that, it might actually add a password in there, which could be P or it could be password or something very secure,
right,
when it doesn't have it, so it can get it through the API.
Right.
And that actually could be happening. I'd have to check. And at one point,
that would make
it
sense,
was
right.
doing that. And then what could have happened, and this is... We have to caveat everything we're saying here. Today, the portal only allows you to do PFX. It could be the case that in the next release, that changes, and
right.
you could just upload a .cer file. So this is for what it is today.
Sure.
All right, so if I execute that command.
I think you have to hit it again. You had something highlighted, so just hit enter again.
There it goes. Okay. Out here, you'll see that I have one certificate uploaded.
Right.
I would expect to see here in a second after this returns... which it did, and I do a little refresh action.
Yep.
There it is. I have uploaded a .cer file, and now this is available to my application. Now, this is just uploading it, right? So this is kind of like a magic bucket of certificates that's sitting out there securely on the portal.
Yep.
In and of itself, this does nothing. These are certificates. You now have to go match these up. So if I wanted this certificate... or this certificate, I would copy this thumbprint, go back to my application, and this is where I would change it. Bam.
Right.
And now when I deploy, I'm going to actually use that certificate that is in the hosted service. Everything matches up. SSL works. Everybody's
right.
happy. You get a raise.
So if you wanted to use these certificates for other reasons,
mm-hmm.
you would upload them just like we showed, and then just in your code, you would just access them, right? Because they're
absolutely.
Installed, they're available to you on the local VM. But if you want SSL to work, if you want to say, this is the certificate I use for SSL, then you've got to match them up here. Then these config files sort of kick in, and you've got to
exactly.
you got to say that explicitly.
Right.
Makes sense. Well, I learned something today.
Yes.
Because I'd never actually done this before. I've sort of seen it once or twice, but I didn't totally get it.
Yeah.
So this show has accomplished its goal, which is to educate me. If you guys, as a side effect, learn something, then great. And let us know if you learned something, or if you didn't, or if there's something you'd like to learn, by sending us a message to @CloudCoverShow on Twitter.
All right.
We like getting those. Makes us feel good.
It makes us feel
gives us the illusion that
really,
people are watching.
Really good.
You know? So that's good.
And if you joined us for the live Cloudcast at TechEd,
yeah.
we apologize in advance. And now in post. Because if you watch it after this, we apologize in advance. If you already watched it,
then
we apologize.
Then we apologize. Okay.
All right.
Now everyone's going to watch it to find out why we're apologizing. That's good. Okay.
Good. So with that, thank you, and we will
see you next
week.